Hello, dumplings. Welcome to Let's Get Ugly, the podcast where we dive deep into the latest beauty, wellness, and lifestyle secrets that aren't always pretty, but always real.
We're your co-hosts, Trishna and Disha.
The sister duo keeping it 100% authentic, really silly, and sassy all at the same time.
We are super sassy. So come join us, grab your favorite drink, and welcome to this episode of Let's Get Ugly.
Nell Hudson, welcome to Let's Get Ugly.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
You are a woman who contains so many different titles: actor, writer, storyteller, and now stepping into motherhood.
Yes. You've played period heroines, written modern heartbreak, and spoken truthfully about some of the hardest things a person can live through. But let's start with today. You're stepping into motherhood while still deeply rooted in your creative work. What does this chapter feel like for you?
I am stepping into motherhood. It's very exciting. I'm about 6.5 months pregnant while I'm talking to you. So wow. I can't wait to show this to this child one day. It feels very calm, to be honest with you. I don't know what it's been like for other mothers out there, but my experience of pregnancy is that I don't feel enormously creative, if I'm being completely transparent. It's called Let's Get Ugly, so I wanted to be really truthful. I think the energy required to grow a baby is consuming so much of me that I feel like creativity is an energy, and normally that is channeled out of me via acting or via writing. And while I've been pregnant, I've just felt like that energy is going into making the baby. It sounds kind of woo-woo, but that's how it feels. So it's, but in a way that I feel quite calm about. I'm not sort of panicking like, help, I haven't been writing, I've got writer's block, or I'm out of work acting. I just feel really good and really calm at the moment. It's
that's
very
amazing.
Nice. Yeah. And I'm sure it will come back, you know. I'm not like, this is the end, but that's where I'm at right now.
Yeah, which is so incredible. I mean, with pregnancy, there's all these things that often get said, like about the glow and the softness that comes to it, but the reality is so personal. I mean, what's shifted for you in how you feel in your body and how you care for it?
Fascinating question. I do think that for anyone, well, I mean, probably this applies to all women, but for anyone in particular who's struggled with body image, body dysmorphia, eating disorders, that sort of thing, being pregnant is a very interesting time, not least because you have absolutely no control over what happens with your size. And that is a little bit challenging, I won't lie. You know, it's scary. Like, if you're ingrained to kind of want to be a certain shape and a certain size, and then your clothes stop fitting you, even though you know intellectually, yeah, of course, I'm pregnant, my body's getting bigger. 30 years of cultural conditioning tells you this is bad, this is wrong, you know, you should fit into these jeans. You know, I was prepared for it to be potentially triggering when I found out I was pregnant. I was like, this might be hard for me. But to be honest, it's also just been really liberating. The lack of control that I have and the freedom that I now have with like how I eat and thinking about that has made me realize how uptight I was still before. Like, as someone who I pride myself, I'm like fully recovered from an eating disorder. Like, that doesn't rule my life anymore. Now that I'm pregnant and I'm literally eating whatever I want to eat 24/7, it made me be like, oh wow, there were still kind of really, really deeply ingrained sort of echoes of that still, like, that I didn't even know were there. So it's kind of cleansing to be pregnant and just go, wow, okay, this is a complete refresh of how I deal with my body and diet culture and all that sort of thing.
Wow. I mean, it is such an, it's hard to run away from it. I mean, especially because you are somebody that's quite visible. Like,
yeah,
we're talking about the fact that, you know, you're seen on screen, you're going to photo shoots, you're online. Does visibility, well, has your perspective on it changed now?
With that, it's so funny. I think in lockdown, everyone got a taste of what it's like being an actor because everyone spent so much time on Zoom. And everyone was like, oh, my face on Zoom. And didn't cosmetic procedures go up like 200% or something?
Yeah,
I don't know what the exact number is. But everyone was suddenly very aware of their face on camera. Me and some fellow actors were like, yeah, see, it makes you crazy. It makes you crazy if you see your face that much. Because for me, like, the first time I ever saw myself on TV, I wasn't watching my performance at all, artistically, critically, or anything like that. I literally was just going, oh dear God, you know, that eyebrow is longer than that eyebrow. And look at my double chin and all those things. And it took me a while to sort of get over the vanity hump and just be able to watch myself in order to learn, in order to become a better performer. Inevitably, as we've all experienced with COVID, like the more you look at yourself, the more you can get neurotic about it. But I hope I'm sort of reaching more of a balance and more of a letting go of caring about that sort of thing.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. I mean, we all absorb ideas about beauty. And it doesn't matter whether you're growing up or if it's a pandemic or whatever it is. Like, the narrative is shifting every day a little bit, it feels like, right now. And some of it is empowering. Some of it isn't. Is there a message that you'd want to pass on to the next generation about that and how they can kind of deal with it, and maybe even some advice about something that you didn't hear enough in those moments?
I didn't hear enough that your 20s are terrible, and they just are. And I think that that's a really hellish time for thinking about how you look, and you're obsessed with how you look during that entire decade. So I think if there was something I wanted to pass on, it would be to try and focus on it less. And I think that there's so many other ways now that I've learned to feel good about myself and esteem myself that don't come from physical appearance, physical beauty. I was researching, does beauty make you happy, on my way here? I was like thinking, this is the ultimate goal, right? When people are striving for beauty standards, it's because surely we must think it will make us happy. Otherwise, why would we do it? So I wanted to see if there were any studies about whether that's true. Like, does it actually make you happier? And whilst there are kind of momentary instances of happiness that you might get, instances of confidence that you might get from looking good, the study that I found that really interested me was they split groups into two. They did a big study in Poland where they split groups into two, and they only asked them two questions. And the two questions were, how do you feel about your body, and how happy are you in your life? And the people who they asked, how do you feel about your body first, before they asked how happy they were in their life, reported much less happiness. Whereas if you flipped the questions around and you said first, how happy are you in your life, before the body question, people reported they were pretty happy. So essentially, if you think about this, if you focus on what you don't like about yourself, you're less happy, which shouldn't be very surprising. But I was like, God, these people were asked the same two questions. And it was just the order that they switched.
Wow.
But that bias of your focus can change how you feel so much. So I think, yeah, again, passing on to the next generation, try and find ways of making yourself happy that don't involve the unrealistic standards of perfection that exist out there. Especially now, I mean, I'm such a Luddite, but I feel like technology is just getting worse.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Massively. I mean, I think about the lengths that people will go to look good. And I have witnessed personally people crying while getting a treatment done, just out of the sheer like desperation of it.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting because I feel like there is definitely something in it. Like, we laugh about it. We laugh about it, but we would do it.
Yeah.
You do, like, chasing perfection is something that we would 100% do.
Yeah, of course.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I get that.
No, totally. I mean, it's impossible not to. I say this like it's a magic wand. You could be like, guys, just think less about your appearance and you'll be happier. But like, say that to any 24-year-old and they're going to be like, yeah, nah, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'd rather look hot, thank you.
Yeah.
I was like, even someone in their late 20s, they're like, what are you saying? I'm going to turn 30. Like, what does this mean?
Yeah, of course.
So it's an interesting time for that, for sure.
Yeah. Moving on to your new role as author.
Yes.
Writing just for today felt like a turning point. Suddenly, it's not a part of a play or a movie or playing a part. You're telling the story. Was that a creative milestone for you?
Absolutely. Massively. The feeling that I got when I was offered a publishing deal for the novel was like the highest high ever. I just couldn't believe it because I wasn't setting out to be a writer when I wrote this book. I just wrote it, like it just came out of me. And to be affirmed for that was just the best feeling in the world. Like you say, it's something that's all my own. It's not, you know, when you're an actor, you are very much a cog in a big machine, which is a wonderful, very exciting thing. And I love that it's so collaborative. But yeah, this just being my own thing and my own baby was very, very affirming.
It's like your first birth.
Yeah, it was. It is. It's very exposing, though. Like, I used to sing and songwrite a bit in my early 20s, and I found that far too exposing because that was writing my own songs and then also performing them. And like, it's just so naked, like being on a stage singing your own songs was too far for me. And the fiction thing is like a very happy medium between how much of myself I want to share, because anything in there that someone's like, is that about you, can be like, no, it's not real, it's not about me. And kind of slightly hide behind that, but it's still, you know, really, really personal and very raw. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, which is so exciting. I mean, you were saying that with writing, obviously it was more of a solo act and acting is way more collaborative. But what else did writing give back to you that acting doesn't, in a way?
Inevitably, because it came from me, I get a lot of really lovely connection with fans from my acting work that means a lot to me. But the connection that I get with people who've read my book inevitably touches a deeper part of me, because it's my own words and it's my own view on life. I think that any writer who writes fiction, what you're sort of trying to convey is, especially with first novels, is, hey, this is what life feels like for me. This is kind of how the world feels like for me. Anyone else? And then if someone reads your book and go, yeah, I get that, I feel that way too, that's such an amazing, magical connection. Whereas from a character I play, I might have someone reach out and go, wow, you played that storyline so well. And I'm like, well, thank you so much, I'm so glad I did. And it means a lot, but I didn't write that storyline. It wasn't a storyline that I felt compelled to tell. It was one that I happened to be a part of. So I think for me, the connection with my readership, which I don't know, it's not a very big readership at all, but people reading it and connecting with it is the loveliest, loveliest thing. There's that Alan Bennett quote that when you read a great book, it's like someone has reached through the pages and has just taken your hand. And it's works in reverse for the writer as well, that you feel when someone reads your book and they like it, that you're sort of connecting in that way.
Wow. It sounds really, really like a very deep connection as well to like your readership and your audience, but also it seems so interesting because they can't see you.
Yeah.
And I just find that so interesting, like the paradox of that. It's like they have something much more meaningful or deeper in some way as well when it's something that you've creatively put into paper, put into words. I was going to ask, of course, motherhood is massive.
Yeah.
And becoming a mom must be something that is, as you mentioned, like taking over. Mm-hmm. Do you think that you're going to change the stories you want to tell after you have your first baby?
That's very interesting in terms of my writing.
Yeah.
And acting projects.
Yeah.
I'm sure I will. I think the adage is write what you know, right? And that's what I did with Just For Today. It was very much a book about being in your 20s. And I'm sure that, well, I hope that the experience of moving into this new phase of life and becoming a mother will be equally inspiring and all the other things that motherhood can be. You know, I think it's got quite a bad rap at the moment, hasn't it? After Chapel Rowan's interview.
Oh, yeah.
That went viral. It's not exactly like the most popular thing to do right now. But I mean, I hope it is also, among all those other things, inspiring. And yeah, I'm sure I'll want to write about it. I'm just a loudmouth. Like, I can't, not loudmouth, but like, oversharer. Mm-hmm. Are you guys millennials or are you Gen Z?
We're millennials.
Are you?
Yeah.
I feel like...
Oh, wow. Disha, did you call yourself a millennial today?
I mean, I'm a zillennial. Technically. I'll just put it out there. I fall between these 5 years that are unique.
Nice.
So nice. Today I'll be a millennial. Maybe later I'll become Gen Z.
Yeah. Well, you're very welcome among the millennials. But I think one thing about millennials is that we are oversharers. Like, we want to talk about our feelings a lot. And so I think inevitably anything that happens to me, I'm either going to put it in my Substack and write about it there, or talk about it on Instagram, or maybe write another book about it. And it will definitely, I mean, it'd be lovely to be offered sort of acting roles that are also related to that I can draw my own experience. My next film project is, I can't say much about it, but it involves, like, it's going to be quite challenging because the character that I play is going to go through quite a psychological breakdown, and everyone around her is sort of like, are you going crazy? And actually it's sort of because she's the only one who knows the truth. But like, that's going to be quite an intense thing to play. And it's lined up to shoot after I give birth.
Oh my gosh.
So I think that will also be a really interesting experience, like trying out acting again, having been through labor, which I'm told people feel like you can do anything after you've been through labor. So I'm sure it will, I hope, enhance my range as an actress as well.
I really want to see that now.
Yeah, I was like, can you film it now?
It's called The Circle. I don't know when it will be out because we're not due to start filming till the end of the year. But yeah.
Can't wait.
Stay tuned.
Yeah.
Sounds really exciting. I mean, you've played a lot of different women on different time periods and different personas in a way. Has any character that you've played before stayed with you longer than you expected?
Ooh. Well, the funny thing is the character that I might be best known for, Leary in the Outlander series, mm-hmm. I played her for over the course of a decade. So she stayed with me in a funny way that I wasn't expecting because we're very different. But I got that role when I was 22 and I filmed my last scene on that job when I was, I think, 32. So literally it was 10 years of my life. And that's not nothing, you know, that's quite significant, spending a decade with a character. And it really became like riding a bike in that I, you know, sometimes had a gap of few years between filming those series, but I would come back and go, help, do I still know how to play her? And she was right there every time. So it is a weird one. They do become part of you, for sure.
Do you ever find yourself like slipping into the character in real life? Like, does that happen?
No, not at all. I'm not a method actor, and I don't know many women that are. I feel like it's quite a male thing.
Interesting.
I can't remember what actress it was, but she joked that, like, can you imagine a woman like coming home to her children and being like, don't talk to me, kids, I'm in character. Do you know what I mean? I think it's a real privilege to be able to be a method actor if you can do it, because it means that you've got people around you who will like enable that. And if you're a woman, there are so many demands on your time, mm-hmm. usually, not to make sweeping feminist statements, but I think it tends to be true that like you can't bullshit around in character when you've got like, I don't know, other things to do. Do you know what I mean?
Not even your like
your friends would be like, shut up.
They'd be like, we
your
know
girlfriends you're... would call you on it. They'd be like, babe, stop.
Not even like ordering a coffee or like a meal or
well,
like...
in Scotland, actually, when I was filming series one of Outlander, it was the same year that there was the Scottish referendum and everyone was voting as to whether Scotland would remain part of the UK. And the anti-English sentiment was tangible in Glasgow. Like, they didn't like English people at the time. And it was the Euros, and England were playing Scotland, I think, in the football. And so, like, it wasn't a great time to be English in Glasgow. So I kept the accent, like, just while I was living in Glasgow, because I was like, I don't need the beef. Like, let's just pretend I'm Scottish. And
love
luckily
that.
No one noticed. No one was like, wait a minute.
Like, we know you from somewhere.
Yeah.
That's so funny. I mean, with acting and writing, I mean, they're kind of like very different in a way, because with acting you're stepping into someone else's role and someone else's life, and with writing, I mean, as you said, you're drawing deeper into your own world a little bit. But do you ever find that those two kind of pull at each other for you, or are they very separate entities in that way?
I think, to be honest, I'm lucky. I feel my own experience of them has been that they complement each other very well, in that acting and writing, you know, when I'm acting, I'm fully immersed in whatever job I'm doing. And then the nature of the job is that you then have these periods where you're not working between jobs, because it's very rare that something lines up so perfectly that you just go from one job to the next. So in terms of like managing my time, it's been really amazing because I can do both. Sorry, writing is where I put my frustration about acting. Like, if I'm on an acting job and I'm feeling really frustrated, I'll just, you know, journal. And I think that's such a healthy thing to do for anyone in any situation that frustrates you. Who knows what those journals could end up being? You know, it might turn into something.
Autobiography, heard it here first.
Who knows?
I was also going to say, like, you live in so many characters. Like, that's your job. You've played some, you've written some. You are the perfect quintessential storyteller. So who causes more chaos? Nell with paper or Nell on screen?
Nell on screen.
Really?
Yeah, 100%. I'm absolutely insane when I'm acting. Like, writing grounds me. This is what I should have said earlier when you were asking about the sort of different processes for me. Writing grounds me. I'm very happy to, like, be at home, have my dog on my lap, drink some coffee and just write all day. And it's all very calm. I'm just like an old woman and I don't really like to go out because I'm so in my head in the story that I'm telling that I find it actually almost difficult to socialize, because I'm like, I just need to be with these characters in my head or I'll lose them. I suppose it's like introvert, extrovert, sides of yourself. When I'm acting, I'm very much in the extrovert side of myself, and I always go a bit wild and nuts on set. You know, like, if you've got a fun young cast, as I've been lucky enough to, like on Victoria, we were a really young cast, and we were all so close, and we were all staying up in Yorkshire for like 6 months of the year, and it was just like a school trip. So we were just like, I worked hungover on that job several times, which I would never do again because I'm too old, and now my hangovers are so much worse. But I was like 25 and I was like, yeah, I can do this. It's fine. That's definitely a wilder side of me.
So funny. And you remembered all of your lines, like no problem. Like you were functioning.
Just about.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Wow. I feel like I missed that era very much.
Yeah, you did. 100%.
I mean, speaking of your characters, if any of them raided your real life wardrobe, who would be the most horrified and who would be the most impressed?
Do you know what? Leary from Outlander would love my wardrobe because there's quite a lot of really great slutty stuff in my wardrobe. And she's like a 17th century slut. So I think she'd have a lot of fun going through my wardrobe and like looking at my really tiny, stupid non-dresses and be like, well, you can wear this now in 2025. People are getting away with this. I'd be like, yeah, girl, go for it.
I heard the word dog. Sorry, it's unrelated. It's not even in the question. Oh. So now Dish is looking at me like, what are you talking about? So I heard dog. You have a dog. Tell us about your dog.
I do have a dog, my firstborn.
Oh.
Having a dog is the best and worst thing ever.
Agreed.
Do you have one?
We have two.
You have two? What do you have?
So we have a Chihuahua and a Chorky.
What, the Chorky is a Yorkie Chihuahua?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I bet that's divine.
They are excellent and crazy all at the same time. Oh. One of them fell off the sofa and broke her leg, though, recently.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, so it's been a bit dramatic. But they're all kinds of carnage, and so tell us about yours.
Would they be inappropriate to have in the podcast recording? Unfortunately,
they wouldn't be yapping. They would just not be able to be still.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, one of them would be still. The other one would be, the one with the broken foot would not be still. Then we'd be like, oh my gosh, is she going to jump off the sofa?
Right.
Is she going to want to come on your lap, which would be totally fine.
Yes. It'd be an honor. My dog is also half Chihuahua. I'm a fan. I'm a convert. I didn't know Chihuahuas growing up. Did you grow up with Chihuahuas?
We grew up with no dogs. Oh, okay. Whatsoever.
I grew up with Jack Russells. My dog is half Jack Russell, half Chihuahua. And when I got her, I was living in a flat in Hackney, actually just up the road from here, with no garden on the second floor. So I was like, I want a Jack Russell, but I feel like it would be mean to have one with no garden. What could I get that's like a Jack Russell, but maybe a bit smaller, maybe a bit more handbaggy? And Jack Russell Chihuahua seemed like the perfect mix. But it turns out if you mix a really naughty breed of dog with another really naughty breed of dog, you get a very naughty dog.
Oh, yeah.
Who knew?
Who knew?
And also if you're very bad at raising dogs, first dogs. Now I've learnt my lessons, but first dog, I just loved her too much. Like, couldn't say no to her, couldn't discipline her. Like, if she did something wrong, I'd be like, oh, but she's so sweet. Look at her face. And my parents would just despair and be like, you've got to train your dog. And now she's 7, so she's way calmer and much better trained, and it's fine. And I won't make those mistakes with my human baby that I'm about to have, hopefully.
He'll be like, you're so cute, it's fine.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, for me though, like getting a dog was a very good preparation for motherhood. Mm. I don't know if you guys have like compared the two concepts in your brains.
No, actually never.
Interesting. But do you share the dogs?
Yeah.
Yeah. We share the dogs and it's
everything.
Chaos. Yeah. I mean, we have like good cop, bad cop. One's always more lenient than the other, of course. Always happens. But
I'm always bad cop. It sucks.
Well, someone's got to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's an important role. Be me,
so. So funny. So are you just going to be good cop always?
As human mum, no, I think I'm going to be bad cop.
Oh.
I think I've been good cop always with the dog. And it's made me be like, right, when it comes to the baby, I've got to be like, I mean, not when it's a little baby, but like once it's a toddler and stuff, I'm going to be good at being like, no, Just say no. Just boundaries.
Okay. Yeah. We'll check back in with you on that. We'll see how that goes. Yes. So are there any upcoming projects or collaborations that you're specifically excited about?
Well, I'm really excited to film this movie that I'm shooting later this year because it will be my first lead role.
Wow.
Which I've not done before. I'm really, really excited. I've wanted to do that for a long time, like take on the... It's quite a scary thing taking on the lead role because if the project's rubbish, everyone's blaming you, right? They'll be like, well, that flopped because of you. And it's, you know, really long hours and it's a lot of prep. And you sort of create the tone for the whole thing. If you're that number one person on the call sheet, the atmosphere on set is largely down to you. And, you know, I've been working as an actress for over a decade now and I feel really ready and really excited to take on that role. And yeah, I really love the script, so I feel excited about doing this. It's kind of a thriller horror, kind of, yeah, psychological drama type thing.
I am so excited.
Yeah.
That's like our genre, so.
Oh, great. Okay,
so excited. So excited.
Like a Gone Girl kind of vibe.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yes.
Great. Great.
We're going to be like, when is it out? Tell us.
I wish I knew. I can't tell you, but I wish I knew. But yeah, and then hopefully more books coming also down the line.
Oh. Yeah, very exciting. Thanks. Can't wait for that. I mean, aside from work, with motherhood coming on as well, are there any parts that you're excited about for that new chapter?
Oh my goodness, I've got to get the baby out first, guys. It's really surreal. I could only speak about being pregnant. Like, I wouldn't want to sort of cover motherhood yet because it's so surreal. Like, being pregnant, I feel, is very different to having a baby. Mm. Like, at the moment, I'm still me. I'm still in my body. There isn't a physical other person yet that I'm looking after. I'm very excited for it, but it almost doesn't feel real, if that makes sense. Mm. Like, as I kind of talked about earlier, I'm almost a chronically present person. Like, it drives my partner mad. He's like, okay, so we need to start planning for, you know, 6 months' time and a year's time and all these things. And I'm just like, I can just about figure out what I want for dinner tonight. Like, that's the level of future projection that I'm able to reach. With pregnancy and motherhood, the furthest I've got to is my birth plan. I've got my birth plan down. And then I'm a bit like, and then we'll be fine. We'll figure it out. And my partner's like, oh my God, no, we need to plan what we're going to do and like get the house ready and all these things. And I'm just like, it'll be fine. We'll be great. So, I mean, I'm very, very excited for it, but I'm also just really enjoying being pregnant and this moment for now.
Yeah, which is amazing.
I think it's so exciting. Before you go, we have three quick fire beauty questions we ask every guest. Are you ready?
Yes.
What's one beauty rule you love breaking?
I don't own a pair of hair straighteners and never have. And people are always shocked when I tell them this. And I'm like, but I have straight hair. And they're like, yeah, but styling. And I'm like, well, I'm very low maintenance when it comes to beauty. And I quite like that. I feel really lucky that I have a mother who taught me and instilled in me that my value as a woman wasn't about my looks. She was always like, it's about, you know, your brain and your heart and who you are. And it kind of drove me nuts sometimes. Like, as a teenager, I'd be like, Mom, please, can you like show me how to do makeup? And like, I made a lot of beauty mistakes growing up because I didn't have that kind of mom who was like really into like, let's go get our nails done or anything like that. My mom was like writing books of her own and being like, go away, I'm writing. So she wasn't that kind of mother. But now I'm older, I'm so grateful that like that set a foundation of kind of holistic self-esteem that didn't just come from beauty.
Mm, which is amazing. I mean, yeah. If you could give your younger self one piece of beauty advice.
Probably it would be to learn to enjoy exercise without the attachment to like what it does to your body, because that's made the biggest difference for me in terms of how I feel in myself, is learning to love exercise for the love of it rather than kind of thinking how many calories I'm burning or anything like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
I actually have never thought of exercise apart from like what it benefits you visibly or that's so strange.
Really?
Yeah, never.
Wow.
Yeah.
It took me 12 years.
Wow. Yeah.
It takes a long time, but
just didn't even think about it like that.
Mm. I mean, it depends on, I guess, circumstance, I guess.
Yeah.
And what you're seeing on socials and what's being talked about as well, which makes it hard. But what's a beauty moment on yourself that's good or bad that you'll never forget?
I wish I had not got hair extensions after a breakup. I'll never forget it. I loved it. I had this really awful breakup. I was with someone for 8 years and it ended like in the most catastrophic way ever. He was cheating on me with like 700 people. So I was like, oh, great.
Oh my gosh.
This isn't my life anymore. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to get hair extensions because I've got quite thin English hair. And I always wanted to have like really long, thick mermaid hair. And a friend of mine offered me really amazing, proper human hair, fantastic quality hair extensions because I was going through this breakup. She was like, I'll do it for you, free of charge. And they felt amazing. I felt so gorgeous with them. And it was super fun. But when I took them out, I had even less hair than I had started with.
Oh, wow.
Because I probably kept them in for too long. It was probably my fault. Hence the bob that I got in lockdown. I had to like bob my hair because I had hair like probably nipple length. Are we allowed to say that?
Yeah, nipple length hair.
Like before. And I had to just cut it into a like chin length bob because it was, I had like bald patches. So it wasn't good.
Oh, it wasn't good. That actually does happen with it.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Like traction alopecia, I think it's called.
Yeah.
So I remember it because it was quite like, it was a real moment in my life of like, you know, single for the first time, loving. It was a really fun summer with that mermaid hair. And then it was a disaster when they came out.
And in lockdown.
Yeah.
That's intense.
Yeah. The bob was fun though.
Would you do it again? The bob?
The bob. No, God. All I want is long hair. Like if anyone has any secrets about like really long, really thick hair, please send them to me. That's my dream.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's great. I mean, before we let you go, we do a little oracle card reading section with our beauty-themed oracle cards.
Do you guys make these?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So, we'll give you a little reading for your new chapter.
Thank you so much. How exciting.
Oh, interesting for the new chapter.
What does it say?
It says, let your ambitions take over. So I guess it's time to get...
Time to get creative again.
Yeah, time to get creative
again. You know
what?
It's been brewing. It's been bubbling. Mm. I've been feeling it like welling up within me that I'm ready to sort of start getting back to some writing projects. So I like that very much.
So Nell, thank you so much for getting beautifully honest with us today.
Thank you for having me.
You've reminded us that power doesn't have to be loud and that vulnerability is kind of rebellion.
Whether you're writing a novel, starting your new chapter in motherhood, or reclaiming your story through writing and other projects, we're just so grateful that you've shared this moment with us. It's been really special.
Thank you, guys. So lovely to meet you both and have a talk.
Yeah, absolutely.